based on my conversations with you, on what's happened through this process, what I see for us emerging, and you know, you can't ever see far, far in the future, but I'm looking at where are we headed right now, sort of where do we want to go right now? And it's really important to integrate the opportunities for social interaction. The coffee afterwards, after on Sundays, is important for people to connect and feel connected in a way that's not just programmatic. I was talking to the CPA this week about this group, and I realized some things that were really important to me that I've never said explicitly. But one of them is, I'm not interested in forming an institution, because an institution requires turning your attention towards maintaining and protecting the institution, rather than the kind of work that we're doing together, the kind of dynamic, ever-changing kind of flow of activity that we're involved in. So I'm not interested in setting up an institution which then has to be tended and cared for as a separate thing. And so it was interesting for me to hear myself telling this CPA this, you know, and recognizing, oh, okay, if an institution were formed around this, I would only want to be a teacher in it. I don't want to be an administrator. So it's kind of like, I think Flint and I have a really strong commitment to the teaching role and to offering what we can offer, and we now have enough experience in the world in various different ways to recognize the dangers of getting caught up into institution building. So, by virtue of your connectedness, you create a de facto institution, but it's an institution that's completely fluid and flexible. It doesn't have its own set of requirements.
Yeah, my question was, when you talk about an institution, you mean like buildings, or you mean like a 501c3?
Well, we already are a 501c3, but I mean something that has a structure that has to be preserved and protected itself. So, for example, a committee structure, an organizational structure, a staff, you know, all of those things that then become the focus of, now we have to raise funds to support this. And like, if we went out and bought a building, then we would have a mortgage, you know, then we'd have a commitment to that. Well, I have a mortgage here, but that's a different thing. We'd have a commitment to, now we have to make sure that we have enough income every month to make sure the building is there, but the building isn't the heart of the teachings. I want to keep our focus on the heart of the teachings and the practice path that people are engaged in. And so that's my fundamental interest. And the ways in which you can support each other don't need to be programmatic. They don't need to be by committee or by, you know what I mean, by roles and layers of administration. So although that can often give people a big sense of purpose in life, you know, because they're the head of the flower committee or whatever, I don't think that's what we want to support. So that's how I'm thinking about that. It doesn't mean that we won't have ongoing activities, for example. It doesn't mean that we won't have ongoing, but we can continue to inquire about whether those activities are really serving us at this point. So I don't want to set programs in place that then become set in stone, and then the Sangha moves on, and we're still, you know, like maintaining this thing that nobody actually really wants to do anymore, or doesn't support what our development is. So Sanghas are developmental in the same way that individuals are developmental, and their Sangha level practice, which is partly about taking responsibility for what you want to see happen, and helping that, you know, through your energy and attention. And it seems like, you know, people really resonate with sitting practice, with classes we're offering, with opportunities to do retreats. And so those are the kinds of things that we can see that's where the life wants to go. We don't want to be stuck in a structure that isn't responsive to the way life wants to go. That makes sense?
Oh, yeah.
So to some extent, do I want to see like a 500-person congregation in front of me? I do not. You know, what I'd love to see is neighborhood sanghas that are growing and developing and thriving, and that we can support in different ways. So that seems, you know, but the model has to emerge organically out of the way the Sangha is developing together and what you want to see happen. So And not everybody wants to spend every waking hour at the Zen Center doing something, you know, to maintain it. So that's kind of my thinking about it, you know. Yes, there's a certain amount of corporate structure that's required by law. So we are a 501(c). That's so that all of your contributions are tax deductible. We, you know, but not so that we can have a corporate structure. Does that make sense? Yeah. And we don't have separate roles, and you know, like there's a priest class, and we don't do that. And we don't even have a category called members versus non-members. And I've been really kind of emphatic about that. Maybe to our detriment. You know, this may be a structure that doesn't work, actually. We may find that out. We may have to change things if we find out, oh, this actually doesn't work, because then nobody takes any responsibility for anything. So we have to see. You know, people want this to continue to be available, then my assumption is they'll support it. And at the point at which they stop supporting it, it's because it's not serving them anymore. So my attention is towards what will foster that integration and relationships within the Sangha that will nourish people's practice. And that will also serve as a different kind of model for a way to build an organization. Now, it might not work. You know, we might find it's not possible. But I'm already thinking about, you know, talking to Flint a little bit about the possibility of beginning a kind of a training program. And so the way I liken this is there's a kind of motive for people to get fit, for example. And so people go out and they work out every week, you know, or do some exercise. And then there are some people who want to run a marathon, right? And those people who want to run a marathon, they want training. So so I'm starting to think about, okay, how do you, and it's not like I will train you, it's like, how can I help you train yourself so that you're prepared to run a marathon, right? How can I, so you need some coaching, like someone who will say to you, okay, you're gonna need to get 8 hours of rest. This is a way you can train yourself. You need to get good food if you're going to be able to do this, right? This monumental thing of running a marathon. I'm thinking about a training program which would be offered for people who want to do this practice in that kind of intentional way, with that kind of intensity. So, not and not as a way of establishing an elite class, but as a way of, okay, this is what I want to do. This is what I'm putting in front of me right now. So so we're talking about what that would look like, what that might, you know, what that might consist of, and how to support people who want to train in that way. So we can sense that there's, you know, there's some kind of, this is a kind of growing up part of the Sangha too, is that there's people start to want more depth. They start to want more, they want to push themselves a little more and challenge themselves a little more. So we want to support those people who want to do that as well. So we're thinking a little bit about what we can offer that would support that. So those are that's the sort of main outline of how I've been thinking about what the convergence of what you've told me and the convergence of what we've discussed in this process might look like. So now I'm interested in what you think about that. And I'll post this map on the blog, and people can comment there too. But I'm just curious about if that matches or feels congruent with what your understanding is.
Well, what you said about the training seems very interesting to me. And I think Seton Cove having what they call their core curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be wonderful if that existed here.
I'll say that for me, I'm not saying this is what you're saying, but like the idea of a formlessness doesn't really do very much for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm basically lazy, and if I'm not sort of being pushed and guided then my practice tends to fall to the wayside and get busy with life and do these other things. And so I need sort of somebody to say something. I don't know what that thing is. It hasn't, no one's ever said it to me yet.
Maybe you have to say it yourself.
So when I understand what you're saying about committees and that sort of a structure, but some sort of a form, even things that I have resistance to, bowing, things I don't really like to do. I don't know why I do them, you know, so when I question things. But I do them because it feels kind of weird to do it.
Yeah.
So I sort of want to experience the weirdness of bowing when I don't know why I'm doing it.
Uh-huh.
So, I don't know, I just, the word formless sort of scares me a little bit about
how
I might just wander off in my own little way.
No, it's not formless. It's just not structured in the way conventional institutions are structured. It's really structured around Zazen practice, inquiry, study, and the thing that needs to be aroused is your own aspiration. So it may be that something like a training program would be the right thing for you. This is exactly what I'm thinking, is because it actually will require more of a commitment, you know, more of a sense of, okay, this is my purpose, this is my intention. And it's a way in which we can hold each other to that path in a way that you wouldn't do with people who are new, you know, that you would say, okay, this was your aspiration, so you said that you aspire, you know, so you could, we actually could in the training program say, okay, you want to run a marathon? This is what you have to do, you know. This is what needs to happen, or you're not going to be prepared to do it. So that's what I'm thinking about, that thing for people who are really looking for that structure which will allow them to go much deeper.
Without laying a guilt trip on me.
No, without laying
No,
and the way the Buddha taught it was great, because he would say, these are the obstructions. If these are the obstructions. And so if you're on this path and you encounter these things, they're not sins, they're not, you know, it's not a guilt trip, it's like, this is an obstruction.
A taint.
If you want to run a marathon and you don't, get a long run in once a week, it's an obstruction to your being able to do that. You're gonna have trouble. It's not a good or bad thing, it's just you're gonna have trouble.
Is the Zen equivalent to a marathon, then the deepening?
I think it's when people
translate it.
I would say it's when people set a certain kind of intention. So people can practice for a long time just hoping that they'll be a little less stressed, a little less angry, a little less depressed. They feel peaceful, they feel calmer, they meet all this stuff that comes up, and their practice is always going to be a part of their life. An important part, a foundational part, but not the center. So there's a certain point at which you say, no, this is actually my intention. And not everybody's going to do that. And it's not a good or bad thing to do that. It's just, for some people are never going to run a marathon. They're not bad people. You know, maybe their thing is playing the cello. So that's their most important thing. Or maybe their most important thing is their family. But I sense a request, an inmost request from some people, just exactly as you expressed it, for more, almost like a greater demand, not that we place on them, but that they place on themselves. Because they're looking for a particular kind of challenge in their path now. And it's a lot of it has to do with life circumstances, what your life cycle is. If you have very small children, you probably aren't, you know, in a position to do that, because your family has to take priority. That's appropriate. It's not good or bad. It's like that's what's appropriate now.
Yeah, I understand.
You know, if you have a very sick relative, you know, that's what's appropriate. Now, that is your path. And then there are some people for whom it's like, I would go to a monastery, except I hate monasteries. You know, like I would. It's like I want that level of focus and that level of direction. And I think we need to offer something for people who have that aspiration. You know, where it's now come squarely centered. This is, you know, this is where I want to put a big commitment. And I do think that's an evolutionary process. I wouldn't advise anyone who has been practicing for less than a year to even consider it. Not because it's like elitism, but because you really have to have the stability of a daily sitting practice